Now, Donna, you got quite the vent today. It sounds like, what's going on with you?
Well, I wanted to voice my opinion on something that's been bothering me for a really long time.
Okay.
I tried writing the newspaper and contacting TV stations, but nobody seems to want to help me with this. So that's why I'm calling you guys.
Okay, what's the issue?
Well, over the past few years, I've been involved in three separate car accidents involving deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the population and everything. Each of these incidents, they've occurred shortly after I saw a deer crossing sign on the highway. Well, my frustration is that Minnesota and North Dakota Departments of Transportation would allow these deer crossings to be in such high traffic areas. I mean, I've even seen them on the interstate. Why are we mm-hmm. encouraging deer to cross at the interstate? I don't get it. That's such a high traffic area. I mean,
are you kidding?
I understand that deer are wild animals and they need to travel across the streets occasionally to survive. And, you know, of course, to find food. But it seems to me that it's so irresponsible of us to allow these deer crossings to be in areas where these deer are so likely to be struck by oncoming traffic. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're going to stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
Maybe having too much pride is bad, but you should at least have some. And it can't be healthy to look at oneself in the mirror and not recognize your own image. It's got to be limits to compromise, and ain't nothing wise about worshiping mammon. I'd rather risk poverty and famine than not know that the ground on which I'm standing is clear. And God and fear can't occupy the same space, and the thorough don't compromise their principles for fame's sake. This game is played about more than the checks you collect, because no matter how much you get, you're still going to have to subtract any loss of self-respect. And me ain't just me. I'm the self I always was. And whatever being my real self does is all I need to have. The overexposed divide more than they add, and the ones who gross the most tend to net nothing but laughs. Walking paths, mud and fire and brimstone, hired by snakes to take more than their fair share. There ain't no one in VIP who could re-bestow your soul. Ain't no head, ain't no blow, ain't no coming to blows that can help you get it back once you decide to relinquish your control. How you gonna depend on the heartless to be open-hearted? If he destroys lives for a living, he ain't giving you nothing but a hard way to go. You better move like you know. This world ain't got no special sympathy for fools, and the price of being an idiot is becoming the next man's tool. You living in diamond and platinum times. Who you think trying to stay in line with your golden rule? There's only responsibilities and resources and inner peace and outside forces and three eyes and inside voices, and the choices you make determine whether you're living in heaven or hell. And the definition of a sellout is somebody who ain't figured out what not to sell. See, you can't live off pride alone, but being dehumanized ain't living. And the demoralized are unforgiven. It's better to be broke with some options than some sadistic rich person's victim. And long before them boys said stick 'em, everybody been trying to live fat, but they want to rock diamonds in the club sipping Ace of Spades. But when you strong-hearted, you ain't got to worry about that. Have some pride.
This is the conspiratorial view of history as opposed to the accidental view, and it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Day conference between West Germany's Chancellor Erhard and France's President de Gaulle has ended, and a report from NBC's Bernard Frizzell in Paris.
West German Chancellor Ludwig Erhard made plain here today the German government's reliance upon the United States for its defense against the threat of Soviet aggression. That was the note on which Erhard wound up his two-day visit here to President de Gaulle. The French were reportedly careful not to present to Erhard a choice between themselves and the United States. But the Germans were said to be astonished at the sharply critical attitude of the French toward American policy. A joint communique called for all necessary efforts to get the common market moving forward again and to increase trade with the United States through the forthcoming Kennedy round of negotiations for tariff reduction. But no concrete agreements were announced. This is Bernard Frizzell, NBC News, Paris.
Democratic Senator George McGovern of South Dakota, home state of the Fisher quintuplets, has a letter from a constituent that he finds hard to answer. The constituent writes that he doesn't mind a bit all the gifts to the Fisher family, but that he feels he's being unfairly treated despite his similar circumstances. I've got five children, too, he complains to Senator McGovern, and just because mine came one at a time, no one has given me a cent. Michigan's Governor George Romney insisted today at the Midwest Governors Conference in Omaha that he is not seeking the Republican presidential nomination next year.
Stations, this is a 30-second hotline bulletin talk-up. Just 25 seconds from now, we'll bring you a hotline bulletin dealing with the president. Several shots were fired near the president in Dallas. A hotline bulletin coming to you in 15 seconds. Stand by all NBC stations. A hotline bulletin in 10 seconds. A hotline bulletin in 5 seconds. This is an NBC News bulletin. Shots were fired near President Kennedy in Dallas. A report from Robert McNeil, NBC News, with the presidential party in Dallas.
Several shots were fired as President Kennedy's motorcade passed through downtown Dallas. Crowds screamed and lay down on the grass as the motorcade went by. Police broke away and began chasing an unknown gunman across some railroad tracks. It was not known if the shots were aimed at the president. Repeat, it is not known if the shots were aimed at the president. This is Robert McNeil, NBC News, in Dallas, Texas.
Here is a flash from the Associated Press in Dallas. The Associated Press reports that the president was seriously wounded. This is not confirmed. This is a flash. Repeat, this is a flash from the Associated Press in Dallas. They report that the president was seriously wounded by assassin's bullets. This is a unconfirmed report from the Associated Press. I repeat. The Associated Press reports from Dallas that President Kennedy was seriously wounded by assassin's bullets in Dallas. This has been a hotline bulletin report from NBC News. Stand by for later developments as they become available. Stand by all NBC stations. This is a 30-second hotline bulletin talk-up. In just 25 seconds, we will bring you a further report on the reported shooting of the president in Dallas. This hotline report coming to you in 15 seconds. Stand by all NBC stations. A further report on the reported shooting in Dallas in 10. In 5 seconds, a bulletin hotline. This is an NBC News bulletin. There is a report from Dallas that President Kennedy has been shot. Here is a late report from Bob Thornton in Dallas.
Information is still sketchy at this time. We have just talked with two eyewitnesses, a man and his wife, who were standing near the president's motorcade. They said that a shot rang out from behind them. They thought at first it was a firecracker. Then, according to the eyewitnesses, one woman who was in a hysterical condition told us that the president was hit in the side of the head and fell into his wife Jacqueline's arms. He was rushed to Dallas Parkland Hospital. We have not had confirmation at this moment as to whether he was actually hit, his condition, or any further details.
Enough of them I scream and shout whenever I rap on the microphone, cause I know how to write the rhythm, know how to roll like a pro. Some call me JFK and some of them call me Metro. I got the sound that'll move your body, sound that'll make your body go. Sound that'll make you move, I said now, sound that'll make you sweat. Sound of the Metro beat now coming in live and direct. Conspirator Massive said you'll never forget. We got the heavyweight sound and that is no argument.
Stand by all NBC stations. This is a 30-second hotline bulletin talk-up. Just 25 seconds from now, we'll bring you a hotline bulletin dealing with the shooting of the president today in Dallas, Texas. In 15 seconds. In 10 seconds, we will bring you a special hotline bulletin. In 5 seconds. This is an NBC News bulletin. We take you now to Robert McNeil, NBC News in Dallas, Texas.
Several shots were fired today as President Kennedy's motorcade passed through downtown Dallas. A police officer at the scene said he believed the president had been wounded and has been taken to hospital. People screamed and lay down in the grass as the shots were heard as the motorcade went by. Police immediately fanned out over a wide area. A small Negro boy and a white man said they had seen a man with a gun in the window of a building overlooking the route.
Seemed normal as the president's Secret Service bodyguards kept their ever-watchful eyes on the crowd. Everything seemed normal as the president's motorcade began its journey. Everything seemed normal, that is, up until this instant. What took place is so odd that we're going to examine the scene four more times. Watch the left side of your screen. The arrow points to Agent in Charge, Amory Roberts, as he stands in the Secret Service follow-up car and motions with his hand. What he is doing is calling away the president's two most important bodyguards, the bodyguards whose job was to protect the president's back by riding on the bumper of the limousine throughout the motorcade. Watch again as he stands and orders the agents running at the rear of the president's car away. Watch the confusion inside the follow-up car that results. watch the right side of your screen, the arrow points to one of two agents whose job was to hop aboard the bumper and act as human shields. He's obviously perplexed. Watch as he shrugs his shoulders three times in dismay, each shrug more dramatic than the last. As you watch this scene for the final time, ask yourself, is this the kind of conduct you would expect from an agency that routinely sends an advance team to a city a month or more prior to the president's arrival in order to make preparations? Now ask yourself if the assassination could have taken place at all had those men been on the bumper during the motorcade. This is the rear of the presidential limousine. The back bumper is specially designed with a platform on both the right and left sides. There are also handrails on both sides of the trunk. This is where the agent should have been to provide the president even minimal security. The president, unaware of the treachery behind him and the danger waiting for him ahead, continued on to his death. You are about to see segments from three of at least four films shot in Dealey Plaza of the assassination. The fourth was confiscated by the FBI and has never been released for public viewing.
The nation is horrified to learn about the war in Afghanistan while reading up on the Petraeus sex scandal. A needy nation breaks down after the first full week without being pandered to by politicians, and Elmo admits he's uncomfortable working with a gay puppeteer. Following the creation of multiple state secession petitions signed by citizens angry about last week's election results, newly re-elected President Barack Obama announced today that he is now willing to let 10 states secede from the Union, adding, quote, but no more than that, saying that the first 10 states to get the most signatures on their secession petitions can, quote, feel free to leave the United States with absolutely no consequences. Obama noted that the remaining 40 states will be subject to the federal government's military defense, healthcare services, and disaster relief assistance for the foreseeable future. In what experts are calling an economic crisis of catastrophic proportions, financial markets crashed Tuesday following the release of This Christmas, a new holiday album by John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John. Experts say that the Christmas CD, which features the former Grease co-stars singing together on 13 tracks with guest stars including Tony Bennett, Barbra Streisand, and Kenny G, has plunged the nation into a double-dip recession and will likely have a devastating ripple effect on the world economy in coming months.
This is the blackest day on Wall Street in two decades. We believe that when other countries find out the album features a Christmas song that pays tribute to summer nights, we could be looking at a global contagion. It's almost inevitable.
According to a tape intercepted today by the CIA, newly recruited Al-Qaeda operatives are, quote, already sick and tired of listening to senior terrorists brag about the 9/11 attacks, saying that the older Al-Qaeda members, quote, just go on and on and on about the time they planned to crash jetliners into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. New recruits have noted that even their most recent car bombs and hostage tapes are always immediately compared against the 11-year-old attack.
Could it be possible to work with the terrorists to say, yo, here's a building that we're going to demolish anyway. Go, have your fun with it. Do whatever you want. Just don't do the other ones.
That's not even funny.
The second regular session of the United Nations Assembly adjourned a week ago in an atmosphere of official satisfaction mixed with doubts. The satisfaction was based mainly on the fact that a major decision had been reached, and, for once, reached through agreement between the Russians and ourselves. I refer, of course, to the partition of Palestine. The doubts arose from the Assembly's failure to provide any means of enforcing its decision in the face of open threats from one of the parties directly concerned, namely the Arabs. All through the past week, furious repercussions of the Assembly's decision have been rising to a gruesome climax of riot, bloodshed, and arson in the Holy Land and neighboring countries. It is impossible to predict whether civil warfare can be averted. It is difficult to see how the task of partition, of setting up frontiers, of protecting two mutually hostile governments on a jigsaw puzzle territory can be carried out by a civilian commission without military aid. The only neutral force in Palestine, the British Army, is due to move out by August 1st. After that, the maintenance of order is to be left to the forces that have made for disorder in the past, Jewish and Arab militia. The British have announced that they will surrender their mandate by May 1st. For 5 months after that, the only government in Palestine will be the UN Commission that is entrusted with the job of partition to be effective on October 1st. Now, just what has the UN Assembly done? It has decreed that Palestine be divided into three parts: a Jewish state, which will contain an Arab minority of 400,000, over two-fifths of the present population; an Arab state, which has a Jewish minority of only 10,000, and an internationally governed Jerusalem with 100,000 Jews and 105,000 Arabs, with no neutral police force in sight to take the place of the British troops. It has done this by a better than two-thirds majority of the members present and voting, but with a substantial number of abstentions and a number of reluctant voters persuaded just before the final vote. The overriding motive was not approval, but the absence of a better solution and the fear that the only alternative was chaos and strife. This judgment of Solomon is to be carried out on behalf of the Assembly by a commission of five small and disinterested countries: Bolivia, Czechoslovakia, Denmark, Panama, and the Philippines. This commission is to act under the guidance of the Security Council. The Council, therefore, is responsible as a last resort. Yet the Council, which requires Big Five unanimity for any decisive action, is in disagreement. Great Britain is on record against any solution not approved by Jews and Arabs. China did not vote for partition, but abstained. At any rate, the Council possesses no military force to enforce its decision as yet. It is clear that the real test of the Assembly's decision is yet to come. Test of its wisdom, test of the possibility of its being carried out by persuasion and conciliation, the only available means. It is idle now to argue about the justice of the Palestine decision, or even about the viability of the proposed Jewish state. The commanding problem today is implementation. And the stark fact is that not only the Arabs of Palestine, but all of Palestine's neighbors, the seven states of the Arab League, are bitterly opposed. And so are all of the Muslim countries, from Turkey to Egypt and from Syria to Pakistan. We have seen only lately in India what Muslim fanaticism is capable of in the way of mob violence. We have had only an inkling thus far of the strength of Arab nationalism in the Middle East. It has made great gains since the end of the war. It has caused the British and French to move out of Syria and Lebanon. It has exacted a deadline for the British evacuation of Egypt. It has secured practical independence for Iraq and Transjordan. And Saudi Arabia holds a trump card in its rich oil resources, which have become strategically very important to the United States. Like India, the Arab countries have absorbed the Western concept of the national state. Less than a generation ago, they were vassals of the Turks. Today, national independence and consolidation of Arab power in the Middle East are twin ambitions. And Arab unity, weak until recently, has now been given a focal point for resistance to a Zionist Palestine. Now, some people feel that the Arab threat to fight Palestine partition is a bluff. Yet, in a period of high tension between East and West, the ferment in the large Arab populations of the Middle East is too serious to be ignored. Military conquest of their countries is no longer a possible solution.
And again?
Military conquest of their countries is no longer a possible solution.
And again?
Military conquest of their countries is no longer a possible solution.
Let's hear it. Why is the Arab world so easily offended?
Seriously?
Thank you.
Freshman member of Congress has some explaining to do after a bout of sophomoric behavior. You heard about this guy? This is Republican Kevin Yoder. He is apologizing to voters of his district in eastern Kansas amid newly surfaced reports of a wild night in Israel. In fact, the FBI was called in to investigate claims that Yoder disrobed in front of others and went swimming in the nude in the Sea of Galilee. That's where the Bible says Jesus walked on water. So, according to Politico, which, by the way, first broke this story, Yoder and other Republican freshmen were on an expenses-paid junket. They were staying in a hotel where rooms go for as much as $1,000 a night. Now, Politico says late-night merrymakers received a dressing down from this man, from House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, who also was on the trip but did not take part in the hijinks. Let's go to Washington. Let me talk to senior congressional correspondent Dana Bash, because you know, it's important to point out this happened 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. Question is, was the skinny dipping congressman sanctioned in any other way other than being talked to by Majority Leader Cantor?
Our understanding is no as of this point, although our Deirdre Walsh is trying to get in touch with the House Ethics Committee to see if there are going to be any investigations because of the fact that this is now public. But I am told by several sources that there was a dressing down, so to speak, the day after by the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor. In fact, I spoke earlier today with Congressman David Schweikert, who was one of the Congress members who was on that trip. He was not one of the swimmers, but he explained what the leadership told the members. Listen.
Well, it was a little bit on the ethereal side, so I think it was more of a scolding for anyone who may have acted up and made it very, very clear this shouldn't be tolerated and wasn't going to be tolerated.
You talked about the revelry, and certainly I was told by sources that there was drinking going on at this late night dinner before the swimming began. But the other thing I was told by several sources is that this is a holy site. This is where it is believed that Jesus walked on water. Mm-hmm. And so at least a couple of the congressmen, I'm told, went in with their family members. One jumped in with his wife. Another Congressman Sutherland jumped in with his hand-in-hand with his 21-year-old daughter. So there was a religious aspect to this for some members, but for Congressman Yoder, who decided to take his clothes off, who knows what the reason was behind that, except for the fact that I am told by sources there that it ended the swimming as soon as they realized that he was not wearing any clothes.
Oh,
Muslim advocates filed a lawsuit in federal court on behalf of American Muslims in New Jersey, challenging the New York Police Department's discriminatory and invasive surveillance program.
The New York City Police launched the undercover spy operation after 9/11, targeting Muslims in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut.
The NYPD has denied it targeted Muslims specifically, saying it was only following leads.
Unsurprisingly, the surveillance program never produced a single lead into anything terrorist-related at all. But New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly still defend it to this day. I guess racial profiling is justification enough for them to cross their city jurisdiction to blatantly disregard the rule of law. But really, you know, what else could we expect from the same police department that launched the Stop and Frisk program? The same program that was notorious for unjustifiable racial profiling and pat-downs of thousands of African Americans on New York streets. Now, the NYPD is making even more headway into their controversial reputation by not only crossing city jurisdiction, but crossing country lines. The NYPD is extending their branches around the world and is launching ones in London, Lyons, Hamburg, Toronto, and, most recently, Tel Aviv, Israel. Yep, you heard me right. The NYPD is expanding their offices to Israel.
Those names there, those are the names on a piece of paper. You yeah. know the names on that piece yeah. of paper. Will you be speaking to those people?
No, I think Philip...
Live on national television, David Cameron is handed a list of alleged Tory paedophiles on This Morning. Presenter Philip Schofield said he had compiled the list of names after a cursory glance online and gave it to the Prime Minister live on ITV1.
These accusations are...
You've heard the names.
I've had, this is one of the problems, Philip, is I've heard all sorts of names being bandied around. And what then tends to happen is, of course, everyone sits around and speculates about people, hang on a second, some of whom are alive, some of whom are dead. And I do think it's very important that anyone who's got any information about any paedophile, no matter how high up in the country or whether they are alive or dead, go to the police.
It
and I think this is very important because
takes
otherwise...
a momentary cursory glance at the internet. It took me about 3 minutes last night to continually find a list of the same names. I have those names there. Those are the names on a piece of paper. You know the names on that piece of paper. Will you be speaking to those people?
No, look, I think, Philip, this is really important, right? Because there is a danger, if we're not careful, that this can turn into a sort of witch hunt, particularly against people who are gay. And I'm worried about the sort of thing you're doing right now, giving me a list of names that you've taken off the internet.
However, the move has sparked huge controversy amid claims at least two names were visible when Philip accidentally showed the card to the cameras. If the names are clear enough to read, it could trigger legal action from the individuals involved.
Innocent enough, doesn't it? Lots of young people hitchhike. Seems like a good way to get from one place to another. But sometimes there are dangers involved that never meet the eye. So no matter where you meet a stranger, be careful if they are too friendly. One never knows when the homosexual is about. Let's take the case of Jimmy Barnes. Jimmy played baseball all afternoon, and he didn't feel like walking home, so he decided to thumb a ride. He'd done it 100 times before, and he didn't think anything was unusual when the driver struck up a friendly conversation. In fact, he seemed like a real nice guy. What Jimmy didn't know was that Ralph was sick, a sickness that was not visible like smallpox, but no less dangerous and contagious, a sickness of the mind. You see, Ralph was a homosexual, a person who demands an intimate relationship with members of their own sex. So no matter where you meet a stranger, be careful if they are too friendly, if they try to win your confidence too quickly, and if they become overly personal. One never knows when the homosexual is about. He may appear normal.
The whole thing makes a lot more sense if you replace homosexual with hipster.
Outrageous!
What are we gonna do? We're all out of glitter!
Half a million people dance through the streets of Brazil to celebrate gay pride. With music blaring, the crowds walked alongside Rio de Janeiro's Copacabana beach in a blaze of colour. The music came from floats which joined the parade, which was attended by hundreds of drag queens. Brazilian activists are currently pressuring the government to approve a bill that outlaws discrimination against homosexuals. Last year, Brazil's Supreme Court legally recognised gay partnerships in a landmark case for gay rights in the country.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed, I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And
controversial video was shown today at an Ontario coroner's inquest. Images of troubled teen Ashley Smith before her death 5 years ago in a federal prison. A federal agency fought to suppress the video. Ron Charles shows us what they tried to keep hidden, and we should tell you it's not easy to watch.
The video shows Ashley Smith on an RCMP plane being transferred between psychiatric facilities in Saskatchewan and Quebec. Corrections officers fit her with two mesh hoods to stop her from spitting.
Let me go. I'm not going to take it off.
they also hold down her hands. Eventually, the RCMP co-pilot comes back to duct tape her hands together and then to her seat.
How can it get worse?
The other videos are from incidents at this federal prison in Quebec. Smith is strapped to a gurney and surrounded by nurses in gas masks and guards in full riot gear. She had cut herself with a metal object. The corrections officers hold her down with a plexiglass shield. A nurse gets permission from an off-site psychiatrist to forcibly inject Smith with tranquilizers. They do this five times over a nine-hour period. The lawyer for Smith's family is fighting to have the videos played in front of an upcoming coroner's jury.
To people in this country who think this can't happen in Canada, to a mentally ill 19-year-old, a picture speaks a thousand words. I'm embarrassed to be Canadian when I look at that video.
Ashley Smith died in her cell 5 years ago at this federal penitentiary in Ontario. She had tied ligatures around her own neck. In the 11 months before, Smith had been transferred 17 times among nine institutions in five provinces. The Correctional Service of Canada and a group of prison doctors argue the coroner's jury should not consider the videos. They say Ontario's coroner's court has no right to look into events at other federal prisons in other provinces.
This is an Ontario provincial coroner's inquest, and we want to see it conducted under the rules of the Ontario Coroner's Act. We want to have it limited to her time at Grand Valley Institution in Kitchener.
The coroner still has to determine whether he and his jury can indeed investigate what role, if any, the events in those videos played in Ashley Smith's death.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha! Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt! And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm, where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home, with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
A 100-vehicle pileup on a Texas highway. At least two people have been killed and more than 50 injured in the crash near Beaumont. It comes as millions of Americans were on the road on the way to Thanksgiving meals. The cause of the pileup is unknown, but officials have said that it was very foggy at the time.
And I want y'all to hear this defense blues. I mean the relax your mind blues. Relax your mind. That means when you relax. A lot of people don't never relax because I used to didn't relax myself. That's reading my leg, you know. Got like it is, wetting it too much. And one time you got to relax your mind, then you always feel fine. Sometimes you go too fast. You're overgoing your mind in a way. Your mind is running you something. You got to relax once in a while. So it's just to relax, what you call relax your mind loose. I mean, I made the song just on the kind of people driving cars. You can't drive a car and look all across the road. You got to look down the road where you're going, because that's caused so much trouble now. So many people lost, that's true. Not relaxing. And then you see the people ain't looking where they're going, see? Yeah, not where you're going. I drove all through this country, Mr. Lomax myself, and I never even run over a chicken. Never run over nothing. Because I'm going to look down the way I'm going. You can talk to me all you want, but I ain't going to turn my head and look at you. You're sitting up there. You can talk, but I'm going to look right down the way I'm going. That's true. And if you don't do it, something's going to happen because that leg twisted. And you can't muck with leg twisted because when you look off and you're going wrong, when you look around, you done got excited. You can't even stop. And that's what caused the trouble, see?
A terrifying close shave in Oregon. After a man crashed his truck through the guardrail of a motorway bridge, leaving him and the vehicle hanging precariously over the busy road below. Matthew Allen Hamilton, who police say had been drinking, was eventually rescued by firefighters after being left dangling for nearly an hour. The 38-year-old, who's being treated for non-life-threatening injuries, has been arrested for drink driving and will be taken to jail as soon as he's discharged from hospital.
Relax your mind, relax your mind. Ooh, make you live a great long time. Sometimes you got to relax your mind. When the lights turn green, ooh, push down on your gasoline. One time, you got to relax your mind. When the lights turn red, ooh, share your brakes down to the bed. One time, you got to relax your mind. Relax your mind. Relax your mind, oh, make it feel so fun sometimes. Sometimes, you got to relax your mind. Yeah.
Heavy snow caused a 46-car pileup in northwestern China, killing at least one person and injuring five others. Over 1,000 drivers and more than 300 vehicles were affected. The first accident happened when a goods truck crashed into guardrails along the expressway and was then rear-ended by a sedan and two large trucks. Firefighters battled the wintry conditions to try to free trapped passengers and remove 50 tons of steel pipes on board one of the trucks. After 3 hours, they managed to pull three people from the wreckage, but one was pronounced dead at the scene, while the other two were taken to hospital.
When you're driving an automobile, ooh, keep your eyes down through that windshield. At the time, you got to relax your mind. Once was a man crossing the railroad track. Ooh, boy, and he forgot to relax. Not at one time, he should have relaxed his mind. Relax your mind, relax your mind. Ooh, make it feel just as fine as wine. Sometimes, you got to relax your mind. Relax now. Ooh, we'll make you live a great long time. Sometimes you got to relax your mind.
5-Hour Energy CEO Manoj Bhargava claimed this week that the 13 deaths associated with his product were just collateral damage in his company's ongoing war against that 230 feeling. In a press conference, Bhargava said, quote, "We honor the sacrifice of all those who have fallen. I wish we could live in a world where you could get a spike of energy and no crash and not die. But that's not the world we live in." Responding to FDA reports linking 5-Hour Energy to heart attacks, convulsions, and spontaneous abortions, Bhargava insisted, "Keeping alert is never clean and easy. We will not negotiate with the 230 feeling." A wave of passionate supporters have flooded social media, demonstrating the terrifying costs of midday drowsiness and fatigue, with consumers saying that when it comes to extra alertness in the mid-afternoon, they are willing to pay any price.
As the wife of a 5-Hour Energy drinker, We've had to sacrifice a lot in the name of long-lasting bursts of energy that carry you out of the workday and into the evening. We knew the risks going in.
Argava says his company has no plans to stop until the 2:30 feeling is completely wiped off the map, at which point they will turn their attention to that 3:30 feeling, 4:30 feeling, and people with a case of the Mondays.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Antonia Asti, the 61-year-old Brazilian who's given birth to twins.
And again.
The 61-year-old Brazilian who's given birth to twins.
And again.
The 61-year-old Brazilian who's given birth to twins. She says she's the happiest woman in the world. Husband Jose is over the moon as well.
I will love these children so much and work very hard to put food in their mouths.
Antonia here isn't the world's oldest mother, though. That accolade goes to a 66-year-old Spanish woman who had twins in 2009.
Ooh.
High and 20,000 pounds.
1,462 bags.
And contains every single leaf in Utah.
We all love playing in leaves, right? But ever have this much fun? These guys went on a mission to create the world's biggest pile of leaves.
That was cool!
At 17 feet tall and using over 1,000 bags of autumnal goodness, the gang made the most of their interesting mission. Wonder how many spiders were in that lot.
In the jungle, babe. In the jungle.
A quote on the wall hangs as a reminder to generations that time should not be wasted, especially when there's a problem to fix. Nighttime in Nigeria is one of the biggest ones. Around half of the country's 160 million people have no access to electricity, and those who do can't count on a regular supply. The solution may be found a lot closer to home than you think. The idea has been brewing in this classroom among some of the youngest brains in the capital, Lagos. These 14 and 15-year-old students are hoping waste doesn't go to waste. The building of their new urine-powered generator is being closely monitored by their teachers. It separates hydrogen from urine. The hydrogen is then purified, dried and pushed into the generator. It can produce up to 6 hours of electricity per litre of human waste. People in Nigeria have been facing petrol price hikes, a shortage, and seen fuel subsidies cut in the past. Other power options are too pricey for many. So if this idea from the classroom can be developed on a larger scale, it may be the light at the end of the tunnel for millions of households, as long as it's affordable. It appears this is time being well spent.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
I spent it in good company, and all the harm that I've done, alas, it was to none but me, and all I've done for want of wit. To memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all. Oh, all the comrades that sorry for my going away, and all the sweethearts that e'er I've had would wish me one more day to stay. But since it falls unto my lot that I should rise and you should not, I'll gently rise and I'll softly call. Good night and joy be with you all. Good night and joy be with you all.
Now, go find the others.com.
Wait, Ding, ding, ding. Uh-oh, looks like we're out of time. Goodbye.